Hello, you're listening to the Hamerty Brothers e-commerce podcast. If some of our discussions and tips are working for you, why don't you grab a 15-minute call with us at ecommercecall.com. We'll see whether we can help scale your e-commerce business. We will quickly see if we're a fit or whether we can recommend someone else to get you where you need to go. The worst case is you'll have a fun 15-minute chat, and regardless, you'll come away understanding a lot more about your business. Book a call at ecommercecall.com. Hello and welcome to the Hamerty Brothers e-commerce podcast. This week, Ian and I are talking about data capture and the fastest ways to grow your email list. So let's get started. Hello, Ian. How are you?
Hey, Mark. I'm awesome. How are you doing?
I'm good. So today we want to do a podcast on data capture, building your email list as fast as you can on your e-commerce store, and talk about all the advantages of doing that and ways to do it in probably some of the things you haven't heard about. So why don't you kick us off with that, Ian?
Yeah, thanks, Mark. Yeah, so email for me, I've seen certain game changes over the years with some e-commerce sites, and this was one of the game changers, actually, is growing the email list. Some businesses you look at, I mean, email is relevant for all e-commerce businesses, but because it's like the glue, it's the audience that holds it together. But some e-commerce businesses, I've thought, wow, this is so much about growing that email database. And as soon as we grow the email database, we'll grow this business. You know, in some cases, it's like the bank. You know, it's like the bank account of the business. And you know, generally, when people talk about email, they talk a lot about what to send, how much to send, when to send, you know, different frequency, all those sort of things. Now, that's really, really important. But today, we're going to talk about actually getting the email address in the first place. And so the obvious place you get an email address is if they place an order, and that's a given. But what we're going to talk about now, and what's the most probably exciting thing, is capturing the email address before people have bought and then putting them into like an automated, very, very clever, dynamic, behavioral-based email system, which you can do with tools like Klaviyo that 10 years ago would have been incredibly difficult, and now they're really simple to do. So we're talking about capturing the email address before they've bought something. And the reason why that is so, it's such a no-brainer. It's so obvious that everybody listening to this should be going, yes, I agree, because it turbocharges all of the other traffic that comes to your website. So if you imagine if you're doing Google shopping, you're doing ads, you're doing paid social, or you've just got natural SEO coming through, like, if unless you have a mechanism to get them to come back to the site, they're going to come to the site and they're just probably going to disappear because they're not ready to buy. So particularly if you've got a website that has quite a long buying window, so, you know, they might take, you know, a couple of weeks to make the decision. And in that time, they're looking around, looking at different things. So if you can get the email address, it's incredibly powerful because it's essentially free. You know, it's amazingly, amazingly powerful. And it, obviously, you don't, you know, they're not going to convert via email unless they've got there in the first place. If they get there in the first place via your normal traffic, and then if we get the email address, we have a mechanism to continue to that conversation with them, to warm them up, to convince, to go through that whole journey with them. And ultimately, you know, it makes all of your other recruitment channels massively more efficient.
Yeah, and one thing I was going to add there, because I was looking at someone today. I was looking at the glasses market, and been asked to look at it, and I was being given five people to study, and I looked at which ones of those were actually making paid traffic work, and dived into those sites to see which ones were making paid traffic work. And specifically, they wanted to look at which ones were making search ads work. Because if they could make search ads work on generic keywords, then I know they're going to do really well. And out of the five, only two were making search ads work. And those two both had very well-developed data capture functions on the site. So the homepage banners both had a really good offer to grab my email address on the first visit. And that's because they knew that it's going to take multiple visits to get the sale. And it was interesting that the other sites, they hadn't quite got that as nailed. And also what was interesting was, well, both these sites that were winning were both asking for the first name and email address. And that's probably unique to that industry. Maybe it's because people were like a personal approach when you're actually asking the name and saying, hi, Mark, you know, we've got the glasses for you. But it's interesting when you actually dive into that, what works and what doesn't work and how to actually get the email address. So, you know, obviously, if this sale is slightly longer than normal, then you're going to make sure you need to get the email address so you can actually warm them up to actually to make a purchase. And what do you think about that, Ian?
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, it's not, we'll talk about the different types of offer architecture of data capture in a minute, because you talked about their, you know, they got your email address by giving you an offer. It doesn't have to be that, but it's one of the main mechanisms that you've probably seen on sites out there, that you know, you have something like a welcome offer on there. You know, you're giving 25% off. Now, the only reason you would do that deal, that offer architecture deal, is to, well, A, get the email address, and B, put some urgency there. But it's so obvious there, isn't it? There was two businesses that got paid channels working, and two businesses that didn't. And the ones that had that email data capture, because it opens that conversation. If you think about what you're trying to do in a physical retail store, you know, if your site was a physical retail store, you'd want to have a conversation with them. They come in the shop and say, hey, how you doing? Right, what can I help you with today? And, you know, you start a conversation, and email is starting that conversation, and it's keeping in touch with them, you know, because they're not quite ready to buy, you know. And it, if you think about it, again, it's like going into the Trafford Centre, which is a big shopping arcade near me, and there's 500 shops in it, and every shop on that Trafford Centre is selling the same stuff you are, same price, same products, same returns policy. You know, it's these little things, and that's what online's like. You know, they can compare your site against hundreds of people within a second, and this little thing is about creating an audience around you. It's like a moat. It's like a protective little moat as well, isn't it? It's just that little nugget. You want to
just imagine if you had 10 of those stores, and one of them, when people went in looking for a sofa for their house, came shopping looking for a sofa for the house, and then the next day, one of those shops was the only one of them, phoned them up and said, "How did you get on with looking for your sofa?" And next day they go, "Oh, you know, I didn't quite find it." And says, "Oh, well, if you're looking for, you know, a red sofa," which you kind of came to, "we've actually got some of those coming in next week, and perhaps I could hold one for you." Or, you know, like, it's being able to kind of keep the ball in the court of the salesperson rather than the customer. And therefore you can be relevant. You can make yourself relevant to that customer, can't you? Much more easily.
Yeah. It's just doing what a good customer service and sales agent would do. You know, this is what they would naturally do. Of course you need their email address to keep in contact with them, to let them know. Obviously, you can't. If you don't have the email address, you can't follow them up with, yes, it's come back in stock, or, yeah, there isn't. There's an exclusive deal on now. You have to think about it like that. It's good service. It makes people think you have a very good active business that people want to buy from.
Yeah. And so if we just go through some of the data capture techniques that we use or have used in the past. So the first one is the obvious pop-up window, which you see on site, coming to the site. And to be honest, that still works. It still does work, still gets people to give their email addresses quite a lot. But if you're using those pop-ups, you know, sometimes it's obviously quite early in the sale. Like, you might come onto a site looking for like jumpers or something like that and give you the 10% off. And you just go, I don't know whether I'm going to be interested in this shop yet because I haven't seen the products. And so you might close it down before you've seen it. But then, of course, if you then go, well, I do actually want that top, it's difficult then, because you think, well, I was offered a 10% offer and it's gone. So you need to make sure on the website that there's a secondary method of offering that offer for email, so that
for those people who aren't ready to give the email, but are aware of it, can actually give the email. Otherwise, you know, you might lose a customer because you go, well, I saw there's a 15% off offer and I can't get it. I'm not buying it, going to buy it at full price because I'm not an idiot. I'll try and come back tomorrow and see if I get the pop-up. You know, you've got to have that away.
It can't be the only data capture source there. But there's no harm in it. And actually, you can use the pop to put a little bit of your story, a little bit of the reasons to buy, et cetera, et cetera. But basically, pop-ups are probably one of the least effective, but they still work.
The only time you wouldn't want to work is they've not got on mobile sites. They actually reduce your SEO on mobile sites. So you're much better with like a top banner that, you know, that sits at the top, or maybe a chat bot that does the same thing. So you just have to have different methods for different devices. So the second one is, Ian and I have talked about this quite a bit actually, is having a clearance category behind a squeeze page. And a squeeze page is like saying, you know, to see the clearance category, you've got to give us your email. Now, this tends to work for sites where they have a very highly visited clearance page, but a very low conversion rate from the clearance page. So there was a guy who sold Sonos speakers, and people checked the clearance page just to see what if they got anything on special, on kind of like on offer, but often didn't actually end up buying anything from there because they didn't really have, you know, what everybody wanted in there. But people really wanted to check it before they made a sale, before they actually purchased something from his site or from somebody else's. So by putting in a squeeze page for his clearance page, people definitely wanted to check it, and they definitely gave their email address. And actually, we've used this technique to drive thousands of emails across businesses.
It's a no-brainer. You know, the clearance page or the sale room page, you know, the outlet or sale or whatever you call it, you know, like a clearance sale area, you know, category, you know, on the right-hand side of you, it's always, it doesn't matter what business you're in, it always seems to be one of the top, if not the top clicked category of all of them. I can't really think of any example when it isn't. The only time it might not be is if it's hidden somewhere. But if it's visual, it's there, it always becomes huge, huge, huge page. And, you know, it very often converts badly, bounces very high. I bet you look at the clearance, you look at the bounce rate or the exit, and it's massive. You know, they don't actually buy anything from it, but they all go and have a look. So why not put an email data capture in the way of that, and then massively, you're going to hugely grow your list.
Yeah, massive. Because everybody wants to. Because if everybody's interested in something, they think, "Well, I'll just see if that jacket is in clearance. I don't want to buy it full price, just if it is. So I've got to go and look there." And then you go, "Oh, it's only available. You know, it's only available for our members. To become a member, just give us your email address. Boom, you'll be in 2 seconds." Then they go, "Okay, give me your email," and then they're in, and you've got their email address. So that's worked really well for us over time.
That's probably a very powerful one. That one.
Yeah, I mean, we've recently built a homeware business doing that, and their email list went from about a couple of thousand to something like 50, 60,000 it's at now, and that's in a matter of 6 months. And it's that you would never get that from normal kind of pop-ups and, you know, chatbots and things like that.
It's qualified data as well. You know, it's not like doing a competition on Facebook where people really have no interest. I'm not saying competitions, because the competition is not on the list, but it actually converts well. And at the very least, you know, you'll know you've got checkout abandonment emails. You know, when you do, you know, you abandon your checkout, you abandon your basket. Well, it's actually technically, you know, checkout abandonment, because in most e-commerce sites, the only place that you really get the email address is it in the checkout. Now, if you think about the check, so you, and then you, you know, you're triggering these basket abandonments. But if they've not given you the email address, you can't trigger a basket abandonment. So technically, it becomes a checkout abandonment one. And you think about how obvious those are. And they probably convert really well for most people. So all this is doing is as soon as we get the email address from anywhere that we're talking about in these methods, this the pop-up, the squeeze page, the banners, etc., which we'll come on to, you know, you can then trigger all of these basket abandonments hugely more. And you know, what does the average checkout to order conversion rate? It's 85%. Well, how many? What's the average basket to checkout? 55%. What's the average basket to order? 44%. So you think, you know, if you can, you're at the moment, if you're only doing your checkout abandonment ones, because you're only getting the email address in there, you're only sending like a tiny fraction of the emails that you could be sending if you got the email address earlier on. Mm. And that's like without doing anything, any extra email, any extra, you know, welcome campaigns, that alone is going to be really powerful.
Yeah, because you're just sending so many more abandoned basket emails because you've got the email much further up the flow. Yeah, and also with the iOS updates come out, you know, we're not able to remarket to people as much as we used. So it's even more important to get the email address because then we have the data. We have the email of the customer and it's in our control. We don't have to rely on cookies.
And you're creating an audience around you, you know, a little moat, a little protective audience. And that's why you want to do it. It takes them away from Google Shopping, you know, where you can price compare. It's just an obvious thing on so many levels. Of course you would get the email address.
So the next one we've got in is competitions. And I know, you know, over the past 15 years, we've done a lot of competitions in different visors. And I think I came to hate them at one point. And but I do think they have their place. And the reason I came to hate them is because for a long time, we used to do competitions where we'd promote the competition on like competition sites and outside of the website. And we'd get loads and loads of entries, but it was just absolute dross. And I think that the trick is if you're going to do a competition, is to make sure that the people entering the competition are qualified people, so that the email addresses you're getting from it are qualified. So by that, I mean, you know, obviously, if you have the only traffic coming to your website is paid traffic, then that's qualified. So you can have a competition on your website and grab their email address. Or if you're on Facebook or Google, you know, remarketing to people who've been to your website with a competition, you know, you could have like a middle of funnel kind of a campaign on Facebook that would go and get the email addresses for a competition from people who've engaged with your ads or engaged with your content and things like that. So I'm less about competitions for just general unqualified traffic, just because there are people out there whose entire lives seems to be focused around entering competitions and winning stuff and not doing anything. So just be aware of those people. And also, there are people out there who will spam your competition with fake email addresses and try and win it by default. So you just enter in all that kind of crap if you're, you know, you're just kind of putting it out the internet. And, but if you can use it for qualified traffic, it can work well.
Well, and the problem that happens as well is that it just, you know, you then start sending emails to these people and it ruins your email credibility, you know, because they all bounce. No one opens them.
Yeah. So
it ruins your email stuff. So you've got to be careful. If you think about the power of, you know, all email addresses are not equal. You know, the value of an email address is not going to be is equal to everything. So if you think about if on the left-hand side, you've got your super responsive ones, and they're actually people that have just bought, you know, so your order, your customer database. And then the next to that, you've got your on-site things like your squeeze pages, your offer architecture banners, your pop-ups. You know, they convert the best next. And then you'll have things like, you know, competitions on the site. And I've put in that group things like, you know, if you've got a big Instagram following and you wanted to get people to sign up to something exclusive for the Instagram followers, maybe it's a squeeze page, maybe it's an offer, you know, a specific offer architecture just for them. You know, they would convert well as well. And then down the right-hand side, you've got general competitions on because there's competition sites, isn't there, which is just, you know, lots of competitions you can go and, you know, give your brand to these competition sites and they'll then do these competitions. But it just doesn't work. It's just the data's so naff. And then on the other side of it, which is what people used to do back in the day, probably before GDPR, but it still exists, is you can buy data. You can buy email lists. And we've tried that loads of times and it's never, ever, ever worked.
Yeah, if we've actually emailed the list, Yeah, I have had some success getting email addresses from data people and them giving me like hashed email addresses and then using them in Facebook. But that's slightly more advanced stuff. So you can kind of do a few things like that, depending on the country you're doing it.
Yeah, that's true.
But I mean, you know, it's not not every day I get offered email lists from people saying, "Do you want Shopify users? Do you want so and so users?" And then you just, you know, I'm amazed that they still exist with GDPR. Obviously, no one's policing
it. It's illegal.
It is illegal. Yeah. There's people out there who've got lists and want to sell them. So, you know, it's like the people on those lists, there's no way they would have said, "Oh yeah, I'd like to be on your list and I'd like you to sell my data. Thank you very much. That'd be great."
Yeah.
So you just got to be careful with that. It's better to generate your own email.
Yeah, that's what we're saying.
Yeah, it's permission-based marketing. Permission-based marketing is always where you want to be. You don't want to be doing
it. You want to do it on the website. If you think about what's your site convert, the average e-commerce site converts, let's call it 3%, okay? Mm. So 3% of people actually go ahead and buy something. So 97% of people disappear. That's what you're going after. Those email addresses.
It's 10%. If you can get 10% of the visitors' email addresses of the traffic, then you're doing well. So that's kind of where you want to get to. You want to have your competitions, your clearance category, squeeze pages, your pop-ups, your secondary method, and you want to kind of be surrounding people with opportunities for them to give you an email address so that you can actually get that up to 10%, because that's when you start. The most successful clients of ours have kind of got that KPI working, and it really gives them a tailwind moving up.
So it's one of the first things that Mark and I will say when we meet a new e-commerce business. We'll say, right, how big is your email database? And they'll go, oh, it's about 20,000. And we're like, right, yours, you know, you should be much higher than that now. And if you think, if only you'd implemented some of these little data capture techniques about 2 years ago, that email database would have been 150,000. And then when you're doing your emails, you know, if you're doing your bank holiday weekend offers, you know, you're picking a weekend out and you're doing, you know, 20% off X category, you know, you're not sending it to 20,000 people, you're sending it to 150,000 people, and it doesn't cost you any more money to do that. Because you're saying you've got the same creative cost, you're saying pretty okay, there's a little bit of extra cost for your email sends, but in the proportion, like you want your email cost to be as high as they possibly can, because that's more people. Yeah. So you should be delighted when it goes up to, you know, Klaviyo or MailChimp, whatever you're using, goes up to the next rung. That's brilliant. That's a sign of growth.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's you're creating this herd, this audience, this moat around your business. It's this protective moat, and then it does become the bank. And you know, it's exactly what we do. It's one of the first things we do when we invest in any e-commerce business. We build the audience around the business. We do it on Instagram and Facebook. We also do it via email. And email really is the glue that we use to hold everything together.
So let's talk a little bit about some other ways that we can get email. So we talked about, you know, like a live chat bot. We use Tidio quite a lot, you know, to kind of a flow to ask email. The good thing about a chat bot is that you can ask for other fields that you wouldn't necessarily ask in a form. So, you know, if you saw a form where it asks you your first name, email address, and, you know, like whether you were a boy or a girl, or you boy or girl child or something like that, was some information you wanted to know, you couldn't ask it in a form because it'd be like, oh my God, that's a long form. Whereas on a chat conversation, you can actually ask for a lot more information about the person. You know, are you buying a gift for yourself or someone else? Or do you, you know, if you're if you're got a fishing website, for example, you might say, are you a freshwater fisherman or a sea fisherman, or you know, do you fish from land and stuff? Loads of little information you can get.
But I was just thinking, as you were saying that, I was just thinking about, just be slightly careful about, yes, if you can get more information, great, but don't think that you need to go take people through this whole preference center, you know, where they can choose different things. You know, just get the email. You know, make it simple.
That's the beauty. That's the beauty of a chat. Yes. Because you can ask the email first, and then you can ask the other stuff afterwards, knowing that you've already got the email.
Well, that's the right way.
You can then just say, and they can just say, oh, could ask if you're a deep sea fisherman or freshwater fisherman. They just go, no. And then you go, okay, here's your code. You know, so the good thing about chatbots is you can get that information first. It's not like a form where they have to fill the whole thing in and then before they press submit. Like a chatbot will grab the email.
Yes, yeah.
I was just thinking about,
because sometimes people's reluctant to start capturing the email addresses because they start to think, well, I don't know who they are. Mm. And I don't know what they're interested in. You know, if I sell clothes, men's and women's clothes, I don't know if it's men's or women's. And it's like, don't worry. Get the email, start emailing, and then start segmenting down the line. You know, because you can always ask further preferential questions. And you'll have some people that you know, I'm a man or woman, and then you send the man or the woman campaigns. Or you're some people that you just don't know, and then you send them the generic one. And then once you find out who they are, then you put them into these different buckets and pockets. But don't worry about trying to overcomplicate. Just get the email in the first place and start emailing.
Yeah.
And because a lot of the technology now, it automatically does stuff for you anyway.
Yeah.
You know, it'll automatically know what category the person's looked at, and it'll email them the last category or the last product they've looked at or what's in their basket. So it's dynamically generated anyway.
Yeah.
You know, you don't have to worry about the segmentation too much. And that example.
Yeah. So the next one, which we've talked about a bit before, is like the product launch. So you can create an email list for a product launch. You can say, this is coming, this is the excitement, build a bit of, you know, anticipation of it. And of course, you can use that on your social for your engaged users as well, or even cold traffic if you've got something coming that's big. And use an early bird list to generate a bit of hype and a bit of awareness for the sale, and then kind of launch, you know, kind of almost like Kickstarter style, where you say, oh, the first people who buy are going to get this and the second people are going to get this. So we've actually seen people launch new products, new categories, and even new websites using the product launch and get a lot more sales than they would have without building that list, because people kind of get excited about something they can't have. It's kind of like this thing, oh, this is new gadgets coming, and this is what the metal is going to be used on it, and this is how we're going to do, and we're only going to sell, you know, 100 of these first ones. It's a bit like Apple, you know, Apple phones. I mean, if Apple just kind of quietly announced their new product and put it in store, they wouldn't have people queuing outside. They'd just go, oh,
well, that's their offer architecture, isn't it? You know, the three-legged stool, you know. This is their innovative product that solves a unique problem. If they took that away, if Apple stopped making new stuff, you know, no one's going to buy anything. That's why they don't have any offer architecture. That's why they don't do offers. Their whole product innovation is the product launch. It's a certain business. That email is just amazing. I mean, I was chatting to a company that was selling really cool, funky watches that had a real twist. It wasn't like a normal watch. So I won't say what it is because he might be listening.
But yeah, maybe you had that. I've forgotten about that.
So exciting.
I'll ask you about that.
Yeah, that crazy. So excited. I was like, wow, this is cool. And you know, he created these limited, you know, very exclusive numbers of pieces of watch. You know,
they were only
ever X amount. They were expensive, but there was only ever so many made. And it was really had a real fun story behind it.
I bet you wanted one.
I did want one. I do want one. I would work for him for free. Just give me a watch. But it was all about the pre-sale and creating the audience as big as he possibly can, so that by the time that he'd actually made these watches, he'd sold them months, years before.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
And that's all about email. That's about creating that fun and that excitement. You can't do it with all products. But
just imagine his business if he just kind of like didn't do an email list and then just rocked up onto the market and put these watches out there and just went, yeah, we've got 10 watches, and then try to do some Google ads. Yeah. This wouldn't work.
It's just not going to work.
So, yeah, I don't care.
It's not going to work. And this business is they're slowly putting the price up because there's more desirability. And as the audience grows, you know, if they're emailing 1 million people or 100,000 people, you know, there's obviously more people that are going to want it. So therefore, you can put the price up. So you can double, treble, you know, they're about £2,000-£3,000 now. But yeah. I think he'll be on 10, 20, 30,000 pounds of a watch because as he grows his audience, then he can go and try. Anyway, amazing type of example of doing, you know, excitement around a pre-launch.
I just know how much money you've dropped on previous watches and I suddenly realised you just put you into
what
a little,
I dropped?
Like a kill zone.
I want stolen. I bought one and had it stolen.
Well, there's a story.
And I was walking.
So the number six I've got on the list is lead hooks. So if you have a business where there's a bit of information, like let's say you're selling supplements or something like that, and people have got maybe leaky gut or something they're trying to get rid of, and then you go and get someone very famous in the industry to write you or do an interview with somebody that people want to do, you can then say, oh, we've got an interview with Mark Hammersley, who's head of the leaky gut, blah, blah, blah. And here's his 10 tips to get rid of leaky gut without having surgery or what, you know, something like that. And then you can obviously use that as what we call a lead hook or a lead magnet to drive qualified people into that funnel. So if you're doing some products around, you know, some fitness or some specific niche or something where people are interested in getting that info, then, you know, using influencers to create those kind of lead hooks, those lead magnets can work really well because the people will want to know the information. They'll want to give the email address for it. And then, of course, you're on the email list and you can try and sell them the things that are relevant to that product. So I'm trying to think of what we've done with those, but a lot of the lead hooks we've kind of done, I've definitely been around supplement companies and those kind of specific information.
Yeah, like,
there's the need.
Like a kind of buyer's guide or how to, you know, a free kind of course. I mean, I think doing, you know, you could get people to sign up for a free, you know, 10-week, you know, email course.
Well, like wedding is a good example, isn't it? You know, if you're a wedding shop and you've got someone, you know, someone's famous who's just got married or something like that, and you got them to do.
Yeah, and it doesn't need to be somebody famous.
No,
it
doesn't
have to be that.
Someone would trust. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Or just, you know, a person in the business. I mean, that example of the wedding, we did a wedding guide, didn't we? A wedding buyer's guide, and we were selling wedding favors. This particular business, e-commerce business, we were selling wedding favors, and we did a wedding. No, the seven essential secrets that you must know.
Gosh, yeah, we did
when you're buying
like
your wedding stuff, and that was
I think it was something
like email course.
It was something like how to get like a celebrity's wedding for the affordable cost or something like that. It was like how to get the big wedding for the
job to be done.
Something like that, yeah. And I can't remember exactly what it was. Obviously, it was written better than that, but that worked really well because everybody were coming to the wedding favors stop. They didn't have as much money as the top end.
No, but also people looking at the wedding favors, they took months to make the decision. Months. And obviously, if you're paying traffic, they're never going to convert on the first wedding favor that they see. It's going to take months. So, you know, that's where the buying window is massively big. And obviously, you then need a mechanism to continue that conversation. And you know, and it's email, you know, and it isn't, we didn't just do the wedding guide. You know, we then had a whole email program where they got onto the list and we did all sorts of conversational starters. And that was a game changer. That was really, really powerful.
Yeah, because it was just a different way to get an email address, wasn't it? And you know, because the people had the need and they were, you know, you knew they were researching the purchase and you knew they were in the sales cycle where they were researching stuff. So therefore, you knew they were open to good information that solved them time or is going to get them to another level.
You know what's awesome about it is that you're getting the email address of people when you know they're ready to buy. And that's the key. You know that they want your stuff because they're looking at your stuff and they've sent your email. And you also know that they're getting ready to buying that thing, whatever it is, table lamp, they're in that mode. And that's where they're hyper responsive. And that's why you should be emailing them a lot more is in this time when they've just signed up. You know, they're basically putting their hand up and saying, hey, please market to me. I am your target market and I want to buy your stuff now. Mm. And that's when you should be emailing. But, you know, obviously, I mean, we could do a podcast on what to email, couldn't we? How to email and what to email, what to say, because there's a load of stuff in that. But forget that, right? Get your email data capture going. Don't do it today. You today, you're going to have 1,000 emails that you wouldn't have had.
By the end
of the week, you know, I don't know how, you know, however big you are, but 10% of traffic is what we go for. So start it.
Yeah. Here's number seven. This is what we've done. A lot of our customers have actually got physical stores as well. And of course, everybody walking around the physical store and you say to them, you're getting data capture in the store. And they go, oh yeah, we're getting what's that, a dinging noise?
Sorry. Carry on.
So basically, they're getting data capture. So I said, yeah, when everybody buys something, we get a data capture. And I was like saying, well, what about all the people in the store who just come into the store, browse, and then leave? You know, there's all those people, like on a website, you could be getting the email capture from. And what we did with a couple of cases, I think we've done it for a big car parts company in the UK and some of the other big clients we've got, did a scratch and win. So everybody coming into the shop got a scratch and win competition card. They scratched off the code to see a code. They had to go online to enter the code. And to enter the code and to see whether they won, we emailed them the result. So in order to see if they'd won, they had to get emailed. And that worked really, really well. So suddenly there was all these people browsing the store that were just kind of coming in and out of the stores across the UK, we were getting all that data from all these qualified people across the UK all those national stores. And that was amazing. Yeah. We also did it in the supermarket as well, didn't we? With a beer.
We did.
Yeah.
Yeah, we did. Oh, yeah, we did.
It was a mistake. It was a mistake because they had to do a promotion to get into Sainsbury's, didn't they? And they had to do a competition. So we put together this kind of, it was back in the day when SMS, we used to do it by SMS. And it was around the same time when we did the SMS for the World Cup, Jonathan Ross and all that malarkey, but that's another story.
No, that was a Sports Mile, BBC Sports Mile.
That was Comic Relief, wasn't it? Yeah. And anyway, we did this competition for the beer and there was this brand new beer. And then suddenly they had an email database of 20,000 people.
Yeah,
you know, pretty much like about 3 weeks after they'd launched the beer. And obviously all those people who'd you know, bought the beer were the people who bought the beer and trying it. And, you know, that was an amazing start to the business to be able to kind of communicate to all the people who bought it to see what they thought of it and what they thought about the price and what they were doing with it. So you can kind of get those email addresses.
I mean, in all these cases, you're building an audience around a business, which is a protective moat. But that data capture in store, those ones where we basically, I don't know if you explained it clearly, but the scratch card with the unique code on it, and you put the unique code in to see if you'd won, it was instant win. That was by far, because loads of marketers have always struggled with how do you get data capture in store? And how do you drive in-store traffic, to get the email addresses? And that was by far the most successful thing that I had ever seen, bar none. I mean, we were getting, in one particular case, that car parts company, they had about 300 stores nationwide. So I think we did about 500,000 of these. It was a big scale. Mm. But we had over half of them were redeemed, which is in terms of, we didn't send them all out actually, but the ones that we did send out, we had half of everyone. We knew, we tracked it, like we were quite anal, and we tracked it all, and half of them came back, which was by far the most powerful data capture mechanism of in-store to online we'd ever seen.
Yeah, it was such a massive database after that, wasn't it, as well? Yeah. I mean, we used to use those peel and win kind of like golden tickets, didn't we? So we'd actually send them out with the products. Even though we've got the databases, we'd send them out with the products, and then people would get one chance. Obviously, there's one ticket per product they bought. And we saw that repeat business went up just because if you ordered again, you'd get another chance at winning the competition because you've got another card. And it seems so stupid because
that was a B2B client. Yeah. And that's where they were ordering things. I mean, basically, they wanted people to order from them rather than another supplier because they can get the stuff from anywhere. And it's giving them an incentive to go and do it. But I think what did happen when people did split their orders into two to get another golden ticket.
And I remember the guy who was running it. Someone came into the factory and said, "Oh, was that a winning ticket?" And he went, "Oh no, the winning ticket's over there." And he was like, kind of let it out the bag that he'd taken out the winning ticket and held it back. Yeah. And it's just like, oh, what a numpty. Anyway,
don't tell him where that company is.
No. So the other thing you can do with scratch and win as well is if you can match up with, it's kind of like called order stuffing. So you basically match up with someone who's similar size to you, and you say, "Well, you put my competition card in your deliveries, and I'll put my competition card. You put your competition in mine, and vice versa." So we basically kind of swap. Yeah, and that can work really well because
loads of people do that.
Yes. So if you're not competing with them, but they're selling to a similar demographic, that can work really well.
Yeah. What most people do is just put like a little postcard in there with here's some products, here's an offer, which is fine. But if you do the peel and win side of it, your redemption is going to be really high. Mm. And 50% theoretically is what we've seen.
Yeah.
So you're not going to get 50% of all your postcards you drop in someone else's box. They're going to buy.
So you might get the kind of repeat business effect of it too, because they think, "Oh, if I buy again, I'm going to get another chance at that competition." So it kind of works out for both parties because they're getting data from each other. You don't have to worry about GDPR because people are naturally giving their data on their behalf to enter the competition, and you can get them to opt in and all that kind of stuff. But that can work really well, and doesn't cost you anything because all you've done is gone to somebody that sells, let's say you sell handbags and someone sells shoes. You just say, you put these 1,000 cards in your orders for the next couple of weeks, and we'll put these 1,000 cards in our orders over the next couple of weeks, and jobs are good. And we've both got new data to go for. I mean, it's pretty low cost, high win, really.
Yeah. If anybody wants, I mean, we did this years ago. We've got the templates. I don't wonder whether or not, I'm reticent to say this, but whether or not if people wanted us to do this, we could do it.
Stop.
No, but we could.
Because you always say things like this, and I just get hammered with the emails and say,
Mark.
Yeah, no, we haven't got any. We haven't got. It's a long time ago, so we haven't got anything for that. Right. But yeah, if you do have any ideas, you can talk to us about it. But I mean, that's pretty much the only other things I've got on the list is exclusive content, secret podcast episodes. You know, things that you can kind of hide behind an email wall that people really want. To get some more emails and think about anything like a blog you've got that gets a load of traffic but doesn't actually convert very well. You know, that should be maybe not driving to a sale, but actually getting those email addresses. So putting competitions on that blog content or, you know, your kind of lead magnets or things like that to monetize the blog, it's probably easier to grab an email address from that rather than trying to get that to drive traffic to the actual products. Because people, you know, like one of the companies we work with, they've got like a blog article, one of the most top ones is like how to repair a suit. And of course, if people are looking to repair a suit, they're probably not looking to buy a suit yet. They're actually looking to probably repair one, but there's no reason why they can't capture that data. And then they might send them a shirt offer, you know, 2 months time, and they might actually convert because they're probably the right demographic anyway. So, you know, but if you try to get,
in fact, that's a very good point actually, because I'm working with quite a few businesses now that have massively good natural traffic coming through to some blogs. In fact, two huge businesses, one's in gardening and one's in kitchenware. And, you know, they've got these blog articles which are really, really well searched and bringing in loads of traffic, but of course they're bouncing off them. And the key is to get the data. It's how to monetize these blogs. And the only way really to do it is to have a really, really good data capture mechanism in place to get these emails to then push them to convert down the line.
Yeah.
And that's the way that can allow you to justify investing in the blog.
Yeah, because then you can say 10% of the blog traffic we get is email addresses, and then we can monitor that. And of those 10% emails that we're getting, we're actually turning this amount of revenue per year. So therefore, each blog article that gets this much traffic is worth this much.
And then and then you can start to justify your SEO strategy, which you've never been able to figure out if it was profitable or not.
And that's probably the most ways we've done data capture. I mean, there's always going to be new ways coming up and different ways for people to do it. And we haven't really talked about, you know, offline advertising and things like that. But I think one last thing I would add is if you have, you know, if you're getting interviewed in a big offline publication, like you're on the BBC News or you're in a Bit magazine or you're in Vogue or something's happening, then what will happen is you'll get that article. There'll be a huge amount of traffic that come and look at the site and just kind of then disappear. And you'll think, oh, I'm in Vogue. I've made it. But what happens is you just get this huge influx of traffic. Your website falls over and then nothing. But if you've got your data capture strategy really on point and really ready to go, then a lot of that traffic up to about 10%, but maybe more, because they're probably that kind of traffic that kind of really warmed by the article or something like that. They'll give you the email address, and then you've got a chance to sell them something, because the likelihood that someone's reading a Vogue magazine, looking at your wool that's been featured and having a need for that wool at that specific time is very small. But they might, when they come up to Christmas, maybe in 6 months' time, think, oh, I did see that wool. That'd be an amazing gift for somebody. I've just been sent an offer. I know who this is. I'm going to go and buy it. So you've got to really get your data capture going in order to take advantage of that PR traffic that's coming in. Yeah.
Totally.
Awesome. Totally. Well, thank you very much, Ian.
Okay.
I hope you enjoyed that. And I'll speak to you next week.